Final hour overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app, your home smart speaker, and up on TSN 2. Brian Hazio, Doug Jeff O'Neill, Jamie Noodles McLennan, Chris Johnston later in the hour, our TSN Hockey Insider, our buddy Steve Phillips on the Jays. Aaron Judge with two homers again last night. Like, Judge did the Fred VanVleet thing. I'm going to bet on myself. And his numbers are staggering. Like, he is absolutely tearing the cover off the baseball every single night. And Best Bets are back. FanDuel, Best Bets later in the hour. So we'll reintroduce those into the mix.
I never thought Judge would be able to pull that off. Like, what a ballsy move.
Yeah, I give him credit because if he stays healthy and stays hot, at a minimum, he's going to get whatever was on the table anyway, right? Like, at a minimum. But obviously, I think if he becomes a free agent and walks, he's going to get more. And, you know, he's not a young guy. He's 30 years old already. But his numbers right now, like, he's hitting .325. He's got an OPS of up over 1,100, and he's hit 17 home runs.
Yeah.
But a part of me thinks, like, when the Yankees want to dig in, they dig in, and they'll say, you know what? You're not just going to get 350 now. Like, we're not capitulating to this recent success and handing you 350.
No, like, they made up their mind based on his age, I think, more than anything else, right?
Damn,
like,
right.
There's only so much we're willing to give you because you're 30. By next year, he'll be 31. You know, it's not like he cannot improve his contractual leverage or standing based on his age, because we all know father time, right? Like, that clock keeps ticking, man. So I think the Yankees have made their mind up. I think they'd probably be willing to add a little bit more to whatever was on the table. But to your point, though, they're not going from 250 to 400. You know, like, yeah, he's not making an extra $100 million or $150 from the Yankees.
But like, on his side, that's what they're taking into the equation. They're like, look at all, not just the performance on the field. They're saying, look at all the 99 jerseys that he puts in the crowd.
Everywhere. He's the king.
Everything. The whole, like, he is Mr. Yankee. He's not quite Derek Jeter status, but that's all there is 99 jerseys.
Well, and the way that they're playing, because the Yankees, they were expected to be a competitive club anyway. I mean, everyone expected the Yankees would be in the mix. But they've been the best team in baseball, you could argue. You know, it's them and the Dodgers right now. They have a better record than the Dodgers. They're 29-13. And if this continues, if they end up winning the East, if they go to a World Series and or win one, like, think about what kind of pressure would be in New York if Judge is up for the MVP, is on a team that's competing for a World Series, and then you let him walk because you're not willing to give him an extra $60 or $70 million when your franchise is worth like $10 billion and you just won a World Series. You know, like, that doesn't fly in New York. Like, it would be bedlam there. And I'm sure that's what he's banking on as well. But he needs help from his teammates in order for that ultimate leverage. Right.
But what is the magic number? Like, at that point, when you make that much, like, when the contract's worth so much money, a lot of it is just pride. You're like, I want more than that guy signed for. I want that, like 300 or whatever he's shooting for. Like, it's a monster number regardless. Like, it's just a matter of working out the numbers. And, like, if it's 60's a bit rich, though, more than. But if it's something crazy like that, at some point you have to draw your line in the sand as a business and go, we can't.
No,
we're
kidding,
not going to do it.
As awesome as the guy is, I'd be like, you know what? Every month your offer is going down to a different number, lower. So you pick your poison. You want to be Mr. Yankee, Mr. 99 or whatever. You're not getting more than we offered. And we'll go find somebody else to replace you.
And keep in mind, like, he probably loves being a Yankee as much as they love him, too. Like, you might get the money somewhere else. Like, Cleveland's offering that money. Good luck. You know, go live in that city.
Intoxicating, man. Being a Yankee, being in New York during the summer. We've all been there, man. Like, the Yankees, you go to New York in June or July, it's all Yankees all the time.
Sure.
And they're the kings. Like, the lifestyle of Derek Jeter, it's just bigger. Like, New York, you can't compare it. Like, L.A.'s amazing. Miami's amazing. Chicago, Boston. New York is different, man. You live in Manhattan, you drive up to the South Bronx. The Yankees are the pinnacle franchise and brand. It's in all sports. It would be intoxicating. Yeah.
I'll tell you what, on a smaller level, guys, a contract that disappoints me if you're an Ottawa Senators fan, watching Nick Paul, how they couldn't give him the 150 grand or whatever that he was looking for that contract. If I'm those leaders on the Senators locker room, I'm pissed about that. 150, I'm not saying the guy's Gretzky, but on a team that's up and coming and you can't give the guy 150 grand, come on.
Well,
I don't know the inner workings of it. If Melnick was behind, I don't know, but I just find it crazy they couldn't find that money for him.
The only hope you can have is if you got an option to bring him back in the summer if that's the case, right? Like it might, meter has gone up, but because he's unrestricted. That's the thing. Like Nick Paul is going to have an opportunity to go win a Stanley Cup potentially. I mean, now they're through to the other round. But his value's gone up because you're seeing what he can bring to the table. Keep in mind, I think he's a 12 goal scorer in the regular season. Like he's right. a guy who's not a 25 goal scorer.
He's not Gretzky, but you can't find 100 grand for the guy.
But that's everyone leaves. You're shedding off players at the deadline. It's like when do you finally hold on and turn a corner?
Right.
In Ottawa, I think that is reasonable. But we'll see what happens come July 13th in free agency. Jays back in action tonight in St. Louis. Goes into extra innings last night. They had the lead. They had it, and Berríos, he goes out there. He tried to hold on. He couldn't. The bullpen tried to hold on. They couldn't, and then couldn't get it done in extra innings. Here's Steve Phillips, our TSN MLB and Blue Jay analyst. What's happening, Steve?
Hey, guys. Good to be with you.
Yeah, good to be with you as well. The Jays, they put three on the board last night, which for them feels like a fair amount in the way the pitching staff has worked. That, lately has been enough for them to pick up some wins. But, we've been talking about Vladdy all day, and he has one home run in the month of May. He has not hit a home run in 15 games. His OPS in the month of May is .641. His launch angle, a lot of that has been detailed. He's not hitting the ball into the air. What is going on? Like, is there a different attack? Is it that he's just slumping? How do you describe a guy that was the most dominant force in the box last year at this point being a guy that is not really scaring the opponent?
Yeah, he looks like to me that he's unsure whether the pitchers are pitching to him or around him. And so he's sort of trying to figure out the at-bat. The other thing that he's wondering, okay, well, are they just trying to throw me out of the plate to get me to chase, or should I wait it out? And he's over-anxious, over-eager. And, his launch angle wasn't great last year either. I mean, it was still below the league average, but he just barreled the baseball. So he hit line drive home runs that went out of the ballpark. He's not barreling it this year like he did last year. And I think part of that is that he's putting balls in play because he doesn't swing and miss a lot, but he'll put the ball in play if it's just off the plate. But it's hard to hit a bad pitch well. Now his dad did it a lot, but he's not doing it the same way. He's not waiting for a pitch to drive. But when a hitter starts to figure it out, and they're getting locked in, it's when their walks and their home runs go up, or their walks and their extra base hits go up. Because what that means is they're finding themselves in hitters' counts. They're working it, so they're getting 1-0, 2-0, 2-1, 3-1 counts. And it's at that point where you can then sit on a pitch in a zone and look to drive it. But he's been chasing at bats a little bit, and he's not found himself in those hitter counts, and so he's not driving the baseball because he's on the defensive a little bit. And the other thing that the entire Blue Jays lineup is doing right now is they're competing against themselves. Like, you can see it in their faces and in their heads and their minds. They're in their own heads right now. They're not really competing against the other team. They're thinking in their own heads, I need to get a hit. I've got to try to do this. What am I doing wrong? What do I do? When do I swing? What's going on? And that is, look, I played 7 years in the minor leagues in my own head, and it is a horrible place to be. I would never have any of you venture into my head during the course of an at-bat. But they are all sort of stuck in this right now, and it can be contagious. And the good news is, just as it can be contagious on the negative side, it can be contagious on the positive side. But it is surprising that they haven't had that breakout game. where, you know, you get 18 runs and all, everybody starts to feel like they're getting healthy and they, you know, now it doesn't always necessarily carry over the next day, but I mean, every once in a while you step into one of those games and they haven't done it. So, you know, the bottom line is when you're playing a team like St. Louis, if your starting pitcher holds them to three runs like Barrios did, I mean, sure, you'd like him to hold that lead, but that's a good team and a good lineup. You know, you've got to try to score some runs against their pitching, and you know they're making Miles Michaelis look like Cy Young, and you know, and so you know, it's a little concerning, and it's one of those ones where I think that they may need some injection from the outside, where they bring in a new hitter who isn't caught up in the energy of this lineup and can bring something different in. The problem is it's awfully early to go out and get a deal done to find a hitter. And so I think that they're going to have to try to solve this from within. It's going to take grinding through it, but it's painful to watch.
Steve, as the general manager, I like watching and focusing on one guy when they're struggling to say, okay, what do you got in this situation? Can you respond? Can you rebound? But as a general manager who's responsible for the team, what are, like, where are your alerts right now? What are you kind of watching and saying, I want to see how this guy's up? Is it the batting coach? The hitting coach? Like, where are kind of your spidey senses taking you to say, right, I got to see what the hell's going on here?
Right. So it's a really good question. You know, the answer to that is the last resort would be to change coaches. Now, I did it a couple times in season and got a really positive result one time and you know, a neutral result the next time. So I don't recommend that. I think you've got to exhaust everything before that. And I think that the big question is, what are we doing with each individual player? So I would have had meetings with the staff. You know, we had those regularly anyways, where we're talking through the players. What are we doing with this guy? What are we doing with that guy? You know, and we've seen Charlie Montoya change the lineup. We've seen him, you know, give guys days off. I'm sure from a hitting perspective, some guys have not taken batting practice on a day just to kind of try to clear their mind. Other guys are in there getting extra work on certain things that they need to work on. And so you try every one of those tools, right? There's benching, benching or just giving a day to clear your mind, a mental health day more, so to speak. But as a general manager, what I want to know is the process. The result, sure, it's a result-oriented business, but, you know, it's the hitting coach isn't always responsible for the result. I want to know what is the process and what are we doing? What is our preparation? What is the work we're doing? What adjustments are we talking to the players about? What are we making a big deal about? What are we not making a big deal about? But it's not about the result that I want to focus. I want to focus on the process and make sure that we're doing the stuff that we said we were going to do and that we're holding people accountable for that. Mm-hmm. And that's the stuff that as a GM I'm focusing on.
With Steve Phillips, again, the Jays are back in action in St. Louis tonight. Kevin Gausman on the mound. And, yeah, the offense has been well documented in terms of the issues. And we've talked about Vladdy. We just talked about maybe where his spidey senses are. And I think, you know, Teoscar is in the middle of this as well. He and Vladdy, they don't have a hit in the last four games. And that's the meat of your order. Those guys, when they're rocking, those are guys that make opposing pitchers terrified, right, and stay up at night because of the power and the way that he performed last year, the way Vladdy performed last year. Springer's been coming on. Bo's been coming on. They got Espinal hitting second, which is justified because he's been somewhat consistent. But I think, you know, as much as what I said about Vladdy is accurate, it applies here to Teoscar, but he's been coming off that injury. And if he's not at 100%, when can we really expect him to turn it around or at least bring something to the table here, Steve? Because he's almost a guaranteed out every time he steps up to the plate.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, he and Lourdes Gurriel both. I mean, you know, if nobody is hitting the ball like they should overall in the season, like anybody anticipated they would. I mean, again, they're last in hitting with runners in scoring position. Teoscar is not a guy. He likes to swing. He doesn't like to take. And, you know, my answer for most struggles is that you don't swing your way out of it. You take your way out of it. You've got to work the count. You've got to understand that the first strike you see isn't necessarily the best one you're going to see. And so many of these hitters, are swingers. They go up there looking to swing to get out of it. And I think that that's where I would want to know within the process, what are we talking about? Because, you know, anxiety struggles cause guys to think, I've got to get, I haven't been getting many pitches to hit. So when I get one, I think I better swing at it or else. And so if it's even close, you have guys swinging at pitches that aren't really, that are more pitcher's pitches, that maybe it's a strike, but it's not a strike you really want to try to put in play. And so that's where the mindset is. You've got a lot of guys who like to swing their way out of it. And when they're making good contact and they've got a lot of traffic on the bases in front of them, the pitchers are throwing it over the plate, then it's a different at bat. But when everybody's struggling and nobody's on base, then the pitcher can be a little more selective about how he pitches Teoscar, how he pitches Lourdes Gurriel. They don't have to bring it in over the plate. They don't have to come to him. They can make the hitter chase, because if there's not traffic on the bases and they're going to tend to swing anyways, then you're not at risk of walking those guys. And so it really is, that's how the lineup connects to each other. It really does. And so when there's traffic on the bases, then pitchers have to throw it over the plate because they don't want to walk somebody. And then the guys who are swingers are getting pitches that they can hit. And so it really does need, you know, and the question is, where does it start? I think it starts with Vladdy. I do. I think it starts with Vladdy, that he needs to get it going, and that'll make the people in front of him better, the people behind him better, and I think he's the key to getting it all turned around.
Steve, we were talking about Aaron Judge earlier, and it's a fascinating scenario how he bet on himself, and 280, I think, wasn't enough for him. And he is Mr. Yankee right now. He's not Jeter, but he's very popular, and there's a lot of 99 jerseys. And he means a lot to the organization, but I can also see the Yankees digging in saying, you can hit all the homers you want. We're not moving off that offer. How do you think this scenario plays out?
So I think he ends up a Yankee, but in going into free agency. I think he comes back to New York. I think their offer was a fair and appropriate one based upon his health history and his age. Mm-hmm. And he's 30, so, I mean, it's not like he's a young 27-year-old. And so I think they made the right offer. It was an offer, if I were him, I would have taken. So I'm not going to ask him for financial advice. He's got more tolerance for risk than I do. But you know, he's bet on himself. He's got 17 home runs. The next closest guy has 12. And he's got 32 career home runs against the Baltimore Orioles. They're playing him again tonight. He's got two homers in his career against Bruce Zimmerman, the pitcher, tonight. And he's tearing it up. So I got to tell you that he's actually a better quote than Derek Jeter. Jeter was always accessible, and he always gave the writers a quote, but he never said anything. Aaron Judge has some real substance to him, and I will tell you, he's probably in the top three of players that I would want to be a leader on my team, that he's that classy a young man. I'll give you an example. I interviewed him in spring training for a couple years. You know, and before he really became a star, and then he had the year he had a pretty good season. We interviewed him, and that year I was doing something for TSN at Yankee Stadium, and I was at the end of the dugout, away from the tunnel where they come out of the clubhouse. Judge came up the stairs, started walking up the stairs, looked down and saw me, walked back down the stairs, came down, shook my hand, and said, "How are you doing? It's nice to see you again. How's it going?" Like, baseball, big league players don't do that. Nobody does that. And so it really, he just really carries himself with a dignity and class and character. And you want him to be your face of your organization if you're the Yankees. They just have to figure out the right price. So they didn't get there yet, but they will.
Well, we'll see what the Jays have in store tonight. Night two in St. Louis, Kevin Gausman on the mound. And, yeah, the Yankees, they keep chugging. The Jays are trying to keep pace. There's a lot of season left, though. As you know, Steve, we'll do it again soon. Thank you for this, buddy.
And you know, guys, I would have walked up the steps and come back down and walked down and see you guys at the end of the dugout as well.
Likewise,
yeah.
Likewise, yeah. Pal.
That's a two-way street. You know that, Steve.
Yeah.
All right, you know, guys. That, buddy. Appreciate it.
There's Steve Phillips, our TSN MLB analyst. Bush Stadium, that's a bucket list. Like, St. Louis is such a great baseball town. It's a great sports town, but like the Cardinals run that town, don't they, Noodles? Like, people love the Cardinals in St. Louis.
They do. I mean, it's. I think I've told you guys this before. Like, St. Louis is a really, like, a hidden gem of a city in the U.S. Like, they love their athletes, and the athletes treat. I was there when the Rams were there. Kurt Warner, guys like that, you know. So it was kind of neat. And, I've sat in that dugout, you know, when Big Mac was hitting 70, I think he was just crushing it. Like, I think it's a, isn't it a hitter-friendly park, too? Because it's, that left field line is pretty short. I remember it's a great.
We got to catch it on a mashup. I think a couple of years ago, the Jays were in St. Louis, and the Leafs the next night, I think, were in St. Louis.
Those are the best trips. Like, I haven't done one of those, but I remember years ago, the Jays were in Chicago. Like, it's always cool when they go to a place like Busch Stadium, like Wrigley. You go to Dodger Stadium. Like, you're in the National League. It's interleague play. And TFC was there playing Chicago, and the Blackhawks were playing a cup final game that night. Wow. And there were I knew some people that were in town that were at the, like, it was a 12:30 local start.
Triple
Jays
down?
And then TFC was playing like kickoff at 3:30 or 4 or something, and then it was like a 8 o'clock start or something. For the Blackhawks, whoever they were playing in the cup final, maybe it was Tampa that year or whatever it was.
Legit.
And like, what crazy. A trio. In a town like that, too, you roll out, you're downtown Chicago at like 11 after that three-pack. Woo.
See,
watch yourself.
I think,
there's,
you know,
some
even
trouble
like,
in that town.
Big time. And good trouble, if you know what I mean. It's a
I would take it,
town.
Too. Even go to Nashville, watch, you know, Leafs play Nashville, and then, you know, NFL game kicking around right there on the Sunday. You know, say it's a Saturday. You know, I don't know if the Leafs would ever play a Saturday in Nashville. Usually it's rare, but, you know, a Saturday night or a Friday in Nashville and then a Sunday football game.
Oh, yeah. You go down there in football season, like the I was down there when I was in Nashville. The Steelers were playing the Titans on Monday night.
Did you go?
No, I was out of there, man. I left on Sunday. I wasn't sticking around. But there were Steeler fans everywhere from Thursday through Monday to the game. Like, they were rolling. They were putting in a 3 or 4 day weekend.
Wow.
And it was just Pittsburgh Steeler gear everywhere down Broadway in Nashville.
Dude, I don't get it, man. Like, as a fan, I don't know the fan code. I'm not. But if I'm in a hostile environment like that, I'm just going as a fan. I'm not wearing my road colors as a, like, I just don't need it. I don't need the hassle. Yeah.
Down there, though, it's like all people, all they travel with.
Like, I just wouldn't be doing it. Like, in a football environment, especially like Philly or something, if you're a Giants fan.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Why would you torture yourself like that? I'm not doing it.
Wasn't it like the Raiders, like LA Raiders or Oakland Raiders, like you would, if you wore like an opposing jersey, like you're taking your life in your hands playing there, right?
That happens all the time with like Giants and Dodgers fans. They're lunatics.
Yeah.
You know, and you mix it like the Athletics, no one really seems to care about the A's, but it's such a big rivalry. And San Fran and LA is such a big rivalry that it gets stupid.
Wow.
Like, it's crazy. You see fights all the time. And
I was very neutral on Friday and Sunday. I wore black. I wore the NHL hat the
first
night.
Should have thrown your hat on the ice when Kane had that hat trick.
I wasn't wearing it. I actually just combed my hair that afternoon. But it was neat to see. And there were fans of both teams. Like, it's in Calgary, I saw Oilers jerseys and vice versa in Edmonton. And I still think at the starting, Daryl Sutter said it's best. He's like, this is great for hockey. This is great for the province of Alberta. This is good, you know, for fan bases. And I witnessed it. But, I mean, obviously there's always a few donkeys that make it bad for everyone. I thought it was ridiculous seeing some hero trying to taunt Backlund and Mangiapane. I would have loved for that elevator to open and Milan Lucic standing there and stuff that idiot in a garbage can.
Well,
like, that's what I hate it. I don't know if you guys saw that video.
I wasn't sure what was going on there. I didn't break it down to the extent that you did. But Lucic, Mike Smith stuff, we'll come back and get into
that.
Yeah,
we got to get into
that. If there's any carryover for the game tonight.
I like
have
what
a feeling
Lucic said. If I wanted to run him over, neither of us would be playing.
Yeah,
I thought that was a great comment, too.
Very valid.
That was awesome.
Chris Johnston still to come. Our best bets brought to you by FanDuel. We'll get to that later this hour. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. All right, Game 4, Battle of Alberta tonight. Game 4 down at the Garden in New York as well. Rangers-Canes tonight. And Colorado's got the Blues on the ropes, and Tampa is doing whatever they want.
What about a little wager for tonight? What did Noodles, what did he bet to, he took a hunch off us?
What was that again? That was on how many handshakes would be.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Maybe the guy on the line will want to join in. If you predict the score and the game-winning goal, it's 150 in the pot per man.
All right. Here's our TSN Hockey Insider, Chris Johnston. Are you feeling lucky tonight, CJ, or what?
I'm terrible at predictions. I'm so bad at this stuff.
Just do Bob McKenzie stuff. Say I'm not doing it. I don't do predictions.
I don't have Bob's clout, so I get stuck doing them, and I just expose myself for what a pigeon I am.
Right. This one in particular is tough. Like the exact score and who scores the game winner, that's tough.
Yeah, that's tough.
That's tough.
Okay, the values, 200, I'll go first. 4-2 Calgary, Elias Lindholm.
He's got a full rack of giblets. I think he gets on the board tonight. I'll say 5-3 Calgary. Milan Lucic scores the winner.
Noodles, you're last to go.
Man, oh, man. I have a tough time. I think Calgary responds tonight, yeah, but I think it's the score. I always struggle with that. But I think it is I'll go 6-4, wow. Empty netter. Yeah. Like I think I'm taking the over.
Winner? Who's got the winner?
The winner is Michael Backlund.
Okay.
CJ, your last chance to jump in, pal. You could make 600.
Well, mark me down for 4-0 Edmonton with Zach Hyman in the game winner.
Wow.
See, that's bold. I like that.
Bold.
We opened that up for you, though, right? You hedge. We're all on Calgary, them winning bigger. What does it say about the way we feel about the game, CJ, that we all think there's going to be a million goals in the game tonight, but it would be consistent, I guess.
Well, it's been a weird series, right? Yeah. Whenever you start with a 9-6 game, I mean, I thought that would be a total one-off, but, I mean, there's been still scoring in the other games. This is a funny playoffs. I've enjoyed, you know, seeing the Stars put up the numbers they have and all that stuff. The McDavid storyline's been great, but, you know, it just feels like goals are raining from the sky. And the one thing about the Oilers, like, I'm not a goalie guy, but with Mike Smith having most of the year off and the way he finished the regular season, he had a real heater at the end of the year. I think he had a .930 save percentage against the Kings. I don't know. Just feels like he's kind of riding something right now. So I think the Oilers are going to get through this round.
CJ, wow. What did you think of the Quizmaster's piece saying Connor McDavid is the greatest athlete that's ever walked the face of the earth?
not precise, but around there.
Well, I kind of agree with the logic that I think he's just saying that whoever's the best player of the moment is probably better than the players that came before them. And you know, I don't want to advocate his position because, you know, I'm not sure I would have written it exactly as he did, but I think you can make the case. I mean, certainly, I don't think we've seen anyone do what he does at the speed he does it. And in today's game, I mean, 23 points, is it, in 10 games? I mean, it's actually getting silly. Like, this isn't game 1 to 10 of the season or preseason or whatever. I mean, this is the playoffs. And we've seen Sidney Crosby win a Conn Smythe. I think he had 19 or 20 points one of those years. And Connor has done that, and they're midway through the second round. I mean, I think that there's the argument to be had there, but, you know, a lot of when we think of the greatest ever is how long can you play for? How long do you do it? I mean, that's part of Ovechkin's greatness, right? Is he's just been such a dynamic goal scorer for so long. We don't know that piece yet for McDavid. We can't know it. I think that there's an argument there. I don't think it's a crazy thing he's put forward.
No, we had a spirited debate with him in the 5 o'clock hour, and it was good. I think he makes valid points, but you know, Hayes, you need to see it, and guys like Crosby have proven it, so that's the difference. But CJ, I don't know if you saw this online this afternoon, but it was making the rounds on, you know, potentially Calgary targeting Dreisaitl's ankle, especially on that one shift. I don't know if you saw three different guys took a whack at it. I mean, this is something, and I think it goes to the bigger thought process of disclosing injuries. You know, I know we're heading we are in the era of gambling and you know, people are looking for more information, but honest
that's
to God,
whack-a-mole,
like,
man. They're that's absolutely like, intentional.
Brian, I've talked to your coach and you were a top player in junior. You would have done the same thing.
Of course I would. I'm not saying I understand that people don't like it, but you're down. The game was over. It was 4-0 too. They're like, we'll send this guy a message that we know you're hurt.
Whack-a-mole.
That's what they did.
It was. It was, but I mean, that's the difference. If you know a guy has a bad hand or a bad ankle, like, it's a whack on the laces. It's a
most gruesome thing to hear, Noodles, on the bench is when a guy's glove came off, and you, like, my first year, I heard it a couple times. It was like, chop his hand. I was like, oh my god.
Yeah, prison rules. Well, what can the league really do here, though, Chris? Like, everyone knows he's got an injury, and guys hack and whack all the time. So what can you do?
I think you can only do so much. I mean, if someone goes like Bobby Clark from the 72 Summit Series on his ankle, okay, that's different. There's a suspension there just with how vicious the chop is. But if it's kind of within the parameters of the game, yeah, you might get a slashing penalty. But I don't think there's all that much you can do. I feel like this has been around forever, though. And whether or not a coach comes out and says, okay, it's an ankle injury for player X, you know, I think the players generally know. I mean, anyone who saw the nature of how Draisaitl got injured would have, within at least a reasonable expectancy, could guess where about he got injured. And so, you know, I that's the one thing I've always found sort of funny about the upper body, lower body is I've just found the players can always tell. You talk to a player who, like, sees a check go kind of funny, and they'll be like, yeah, that's a sprained MCL or whatever. Like guys, a lot of guys really kind of know what's going on. And so I don't think there's that many secrets, no matter what said, kind of when the coach is at the microphone. And you know, of course, if you have that edge on an opponent, if you feel like that could affect maybe his willingness to get in the battle or maybe even injure him further, I mean, it's not popular to say, but of course you're going to do that. I mean, this is the playoffs. It's the second round. There's a lot at stake here, and the league can watch it. But as long as it's relatively within the parameters of the game, I mean, I don't think there's all that much they can do.
Right. With Chris Johnston. So we've been talking about predictions, and you made your stance clear on those. But are you starting to predict Tampa back in a cup final? I mean, they made it look somewhat easy against Florida.
I think it's reasonable to say that. Yeah, I think they're the class of the East. And look, I am expecting Carolina to get through against the Rangers. We'll see how that goes. It's only 2-1. But, you know, Carolina's been there before. But, you know, Tampa beat them last year in the playoffs. And there's just something about the way the Lightning play. I mean, the fact that they just went and swept the Panthers without Braden Point, you know, coming off a tough series with the Leafs. I just think that they have a right mentality, that they have a lot of guys that have contributed offense for them. You know, you saw Kucherov, in my mind, come alive in the second round after being a little sleepy in the series against Toronto. I know he got some power play production, but I didn't think he was that dangerous 5-on-5. And obviously Vasilevsky had a monster round two after, you know, getting a lot of pucks put past him in round one. So it's hard to pick against Tampa for me in the East, and you know, we'll see who they play in the cup final. If it goes that way, I'm not saying they're going to roll to a third straight cup, but man, it's right there in front of them. And I give those guys credit that they've played so many games, and the give a crap meter still seems pretty high with their group. And I think that could be sometimes the toughest thing. I mean, at some point you expect human nature to kick in. It's hard to play through these games. It's hard to win, but they still seem to have a drive. And you know, man, they're looking pretty good with the way they got through the Panthers in the last round.
CJ, there's been some big storylines. McDavid, Tampa Bay doing it again, the success they're having, Vasilevsky, the whole nine. One storyline that hasn't gotten a lot of traction is Freddie Anderson. Like, what do you hear about that guy? Because apparently it was an injury, he was going to be back for the playoffs, and then it's like nowhere to be found. Like, what do we know about Freddie Anderson?
Well, it feels like shades of last year. I mean, for those of us that bear on the Leafs, where, you know, he had that knee injury that went on and on and on forever. You saw it a little bit if you watched the behind-the-scenes series that HBO did. It's almost like the coaches didn't even know what to make of it based on sort of the footage that was included there. You know, really no one knew what was wrong. It feels like the same thing. I mean, he got injured the last week of the regular season. The Hurricanes did an MRI on his knee, and I don't think it revealed anything too serious structurally damage-wise, but, you know, here
so
we are.
What the hell does he think he's doing? Does he think people don't know what the hell's going on? That's basically what I wanted to ask you.
Well, I mean, if he's not comfortable to go in, do you want to put in a goalie who says he's not comfortable? I think that's probably at the heart of the matter here, but now he's back at practice. I think he's backing up tonight. I would think he's going to play games for them, it would seem, the way things are trending. But yeah, it's been mysterious, and it's, again, the problem, I would think, if you're Carolina or anybody else, you just don't know what does it mean. I mean, he's been so long out, and he had the same thing exactly a year ago in Toronto, where sort of a 2-week injury became a 6 or 7 week injury. And, you know, that's, it's eerily familiar, but now the decision, if you're on the Hurricanes end of things, of course, is you're throwing him into the second round or maybe even the third round if they advance past the Rangers. And there's
that's not the Hurricanes' fault. That's Freddie's fault.
Sure. But if you're them, are you nervous about it? I mean, probably the best hockey you played this year was with him as your goaltender.
No kidding. They have no choice, Chris. They have to put him in. If they're going to beat Shesterkin and the Rangers, they need Freddie Anderson to go in net. And I just don't know what it says about a guy if it's like he's not serious injury on the MRI. He's not comfortable going in. What the hell does that mean when your team's trying to win a Stanley Cup? Not comfortable? That's nonsense. Not from your end, from his, obviously.
Right. Well, that's what it appears to be is what happened here. And you know, it's a strange situation. You could tell there's some frustration organizationally. You know, Rod Brind'Amour stopped taking questions at a certain point from the reporters day to day about him. They said, basically, once he's in practice again, you can ask me about him. But if you don't see him, don't ask about him. And now he's been spotted again. And so he's going to be a player, I would think, for them before the end of the season, one way or another.
Well, we'll see what happens with Freddie. They're looking to go up 3-1 tonight in New York, and then the Battle of Alberta, the fourth game tonight as well. We look forward to those and more. Thank you for this, CJ. We'll do it again soon.
No problem. Not even one question with the Panthers' off-ice decisions between Game 3 and 4. You guys are very professional.
We wouldn't put you in that spot. Wow, we wouldn't possibly do that. We didn't even ask you about Mark Giordano. That's where we are with the Leafs. You know, I'm assuming you like the deal. It makes sense for the Leafs anyway, but what kind of ripple effect could this have for the rest of the players sticking around on the back end?
Well, it makes you wonder about Jake Muzzin, I think is the biggest question, right? I mean, you've got the left side pretty solidified. It's not to say Jake Muzzin's time in Toronto is done by any means, but I think it does at least give the Leafs the option to think about that if removing his cap hit plus what he does makes sense. So, you know, I think it does give the Leafs some flexibility. And, I mean, from the organization standpoint, they should all be kissing the ring or thanking Mark Giordano, which it seemed like Kyle Dubas did over the weekend, because that's the biggest hometown discount I can remember. You know, a guy who had 35 points last year, not as a forward, as a defenseman. I know his age and all the things that come with it, but $800,000 just above the league minimum is a complete bargain for even for what he brings at this stage, and now it gives the management a bit more money to try to make the team better around him.
Yep, absolutely. Well, we'll see. There's going to be more heavy lifting, I would think, into the future. Thank you, CJ. We'll do it again soon.
All right, boys. Talk next week.
Chris Johnston, our TSN Hockey Insider.
I can't do it, Hayes. I told you. It's just all that we're going to talk about coming down to, like, a period or a game.
Well, that's it. Like, it's probably Tampa again next year. You know what I mean? Like, you're probably going to play Tampa again or Boston or Florida. Like, who knows how it all's going to
shake
out.
Or they'll finish first and they'll get, like, a hard-working Columbus team that sneaks in at 8. Now, just I can't.
Yeah.
I can't.
Yeah, I mean, but the beauty of it is, you know, beauty's the wrong word. Like, we've got lots of time to talk about it, but they, you know, they have to prove it. We didn't do anything. We sit here and talk about them regardless of win, lose, or draw or anything like that. They've got a lot of work. I still think they've got, like, the goal isn't to make it through a first round. Like, I know we got to go, but, like, say it's the roles are reversed. They squeak by Tampa in Game 7, and they get swept in the second round. What are we talking about today?
Yeah,
you know, like that.
Dire.
That's the difference.
We're not going to do it. We're not going to drive ourselves crazy.
We're not going to. But that's my point. Is like at the end of the day, they're not in it. And you're going coulda, woulda, shoulda. It doesn't matter.
17
We got to go to break. I got to give a shout out to my dad, 75 years old. Shot his age today.
Come on. Good for him. Happy
legendary Paul O'Neill. It's not his birthday. He's 75, okay. And I golf with him. He shot 75.
Wow, that's incredible. I thought it was his birthday.
I thought it was
his
birthday, and he thought,
that's dialed in, man. That is.
What did you shoot, though? That's the question.
Three less.
72.
Wow. That's pretty good.
Pretty good shooting, too, man. Well, why don't we get this in? The Overdrive PJ Picks were brought to you by the all-new Stealth Carbonwood by TaylorMade. I'm sure you were playing the Stealth Carbonwood for better energy, transfer, and more ball speed. I had JT, so that means you had Scheffler at the Masters. I had Thomas at the PGA. We roll it over. We see what happens at the U.S. Open. right? I mean, ultimately, that's what it comes down to. But Tiger, we haven't even talked about Tiger pulling the shoot on Sunday.
Yeah, take a break and let's get into
okay,
it.
Okay, the Overdrive PJ Picks again brought to you by the all-new Stealth Carbonwood by TaylorMade. To learn more about the latest TaylorMade products, visit TaylorMadeGolf.ca. Tiger and our FanDuel best bets next. All right, here we go. It has made its triumphant return. Today's best bets brought to you by FanDuel. Bet on all your favorite teams on the FanDuel Sportsbook app. So I'm back and better than ever, and I'm seeing the board very clearly. I like the Canes tonight. You jump on the FanDuel app right now. You're paying a bit of juice, minus 108, but I like Carolina tonight. I like the Flames to respond. It's basically a pick 'em in that game. And I'm going to put a couple of Johnny Gaudreau props on the board here. I like Johnny Gaudreau to score tonight, paying plus 180, and also to go over the one-point prop, only paying minus 112. I think Gaudreau responds tonight. Remember in Dallas, didn't score on the breakaway, came back, got the penalty shot the next night. I think he responds. I think he's had a great year all year. I think they're going to score goals tonight, both teams. Yeah. But I think Gaudreau will be the straw that stirs the drink tonight. Ooh. So I'm on the Canes, the Flames, and I like Gaudreau to score and also go over the number on the single point props. So today's best bets brought to you by FanDuel. Make every moment more and get your winnings fast when you download the FanDuel Sportsbook app today. There it is, back and better than ever. Tiger pulling the shoot on Sunday.
What did he was 9 over, wasn't he?
Man, dude, it was so tough to watch him.
Nobody gives it to him. It's just like he's playing good. He hits a great shot. He is wheeling down like Forrest Gump. As soon as it goes south, man, I'm telling you, as soon as it goes south, it's like I can't walk. Mm-hmm. It's one or the other, man. But I think that could be game over.
Well, I do wonder if we don't see him again until St. Andrews. And I think he's going to play in that. He's already committed to it. And then I wonder if it's like, all right, reset. We'll see it possibly next year at, like, Bay Hill and then Augusta. Like, I think he's going to keep playing now that he's returned. He can't – like, you can't expect a guy who's 46, hasn't played competitively in a year and a half. Like, if he was in his prime, he couldn't win that golf tournament coming off what he's come off of. Like, a gruesome car crash, all the rehabbing, not playing professional golf.
And you can tell from his leg, it's like bowed. It's like, it looks like a fake leg.
It looks really skinny and it looks really.
Yeah. When does a doctor say to him, that's enough, bud? Like, with the fusions in your back, with your leg, like, do you want to be able to walk when you're older? He's probably got to be getting those questions from people.
Yeah. I mean, I hope he keeps playing, but it's, you know, that was tough. And then the thing is, because he was out early and he's Tiger, he's the feature group. Like, when he sculled that bunker shot into the lip of the bunker, I'm like, this is Tiger Woods calling over a rules official.
I know, dude, but how come he doesn't, like, he hit a 3-iron 255 yards in the air. How come he wasn't, like, grabbing his ass cheeks or his leg then?
Well, of course.
It's just so predictable. He plays like garbage. It's the injury. And if he plays great, he's a warrior. It's like, what is it?
Yeah. Well, I think we know the answer to that, and that's why I think he'll keep playing. I don't know if he – where's the U.S. Open in? Brookline? I think it might be.
Brookline, Mass.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be U.S. Open conditions. He's not winning that tournament. Like, he's not winning that tournament. He doesn't have the game for it right now.
Dude, even if he could walk perfectly, he's not hitting it good enough to win that tournament.
No, exactly. There's too many
Demand is on accuracy for a U.S. Open, unless he pulls out the 2-iron and starts blasting that all day, I don't know.
No. What about your boy Mito Pereira? Do we see him in the hunt moving forward, or is that the – like? Because what makes the Vandeveld reference so significant is no one knew him.
He never heard from again.
And he disappeared. Right. Exactly. Like Phil at Winged Foot. Phil had already won majors and went on to win a lot more. It was, you know, like that was a meltdown, but everyone just chalked it up to, it's Phil being crazy and going for it. This kind of felt like – a reference point 15 years from now. He Mito Pereira'd it. We never heard from the guy again.
I think sometimes at a British Open, Hayes, this was the PGA, but at a British Open, guys can come out of nowhere because of the unpredictability. Mm-hmm. And I had never heard of this cap before. Mito Pereira?
Mito Pereira. He's a Chilean. He and my boy Joaquin Neiman.
Okay, but you have never heard of him. And I honestly think... you're watching him all weekend. You're like, this guy looks like a golfer. He's hitting it. He's putting it like a golfer. But there's a chance you never hear from that guy again.
Possibly.
I'd never heard his name until this weekend.
Yeah. Well, possibly. And listen, the story feels more like about the choke, but Justin Thomas is a grinder, man. He was 7 back to start Sunday.
Dude, that guy is so good.
And he and that's the thing. Once he gets dialed in, it's unstoppable. Like, he did the same thing at the Players 2 years ago. Remember, he got dialed in and it was like, see you later. The back nine, he was on. He could have won that outright with a birdie on 18. He missed like a 12-footer. But went to a playoff. I like the 3-hole playoff, too. I love that. I thought that was – I think that's really cool and unique to the PGA Championship. Anyway. All right, boys. Good stuff today. We got a bunch of games tonight.
Great show today.
Great show today. And we'll see if we can roll it over and do it again tomorrow. We're out of here. Enjoy your evenings. Enjoy other games tonight. We're back tomorrow at
4 p.m.
We'll chat then.